Some days are terrible, you wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like grape banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
The voices in our poops. Guys, congratulations on not killing yourself. Welcome to the voices in our heads. I'm your girl, Christina Hutchinson, and the current voice in your head, this episode, oh man, I'm so freaking excited, and I got a new sound machine off Amazon. It's a shitty one, but I can do things like this. That's using two of the sound, oh wait, yeah, you heard that. When you know what I did? I bought a kid's shitty sound machine with a shitty speaker when I should have purchased a proper soundboard to hook up to my laptop with the buttons that I could label. I'm my own nagging wife and my own disappointed husband. Hey, what are you doing this Saturday, huh? You hanging out with us? Yes. So this Saturday, this is the only show. I have a bunch of other shows in the coming months, but I just want to promote this one because I really want you to come to it. Because it's going to be fun. Corinne Fisher and myself, this Saturday at February 13th, we are doing a very special live version of our segment that we do on Instagram called Did That Help? Where we read people's emails and questions, but our assistant Emily kind of gathers them all in a Google Doc. And as we read them, this is the first time we're hearing them. So we want to do a live version of that show where you could submit your questions and we'll read them, or you can be videoed in and we'll talk to you. We're going to dress mad cute. Oh, I'm so excited. We're going to dress mad cute. And we're going to make a cocktail, but just one, because I don't want to be wasted for a show. And because I'm such a good person. And it's going to be a really fun night. So it's at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when we go live from downstairs. I created basically a set in my bedroom. So we'll be going live from my bedroom. And if you can't make the exact live time, if you buy a ticket to the show, the performance or the show is going to be available to watch for 24 hours. So it's going to be fun. Okay. We're not publishing it or anything. So you got to buy a ticket to the show to see it. And at the end of the show, we're going to open it to a Q&A and you can ask Corinne or I any question you want. Could be personal about us, whatever you want. And then she probably will refuse to answer some of them as she should. And then I probably will answer all of them very honestly, as maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. Who knows? This internet thing, is it going to help or hinder? I don't know. So that's happening. And I'm also going to be, we're going to be in Baltimore, Maryland, St. Louis Helium. That's in the coming months. But just, you know, I really want to promote this show because it's going to be exciting. If you've purchased merch from me, it's taken fucking forever to ship. I mailed my friend Wendy a Christmas present a month and a half ago. And I remember I stood in line at the post office because I love going to the post office. I feel like an everyday girl, you know? Ooh, she goes to the post office. I'm running an errand, guys. Don't talk to me right now. I'm running the post office. And I love going to the post office because that's where my P.O. box is. But I also love going to the post office because it's like a regular everyday errand. And it's just nice to have something normal in my fucking life. You know what I mean? But I mailed my friend a Christmas present to St. Louis and I paid for the 3-day shipping and she got it yesterday. So I was like, all right, yeah. And I've mailed so much shit out and people have not gotten them, like just with the good old postage stamp. So if you ordered merch, it's going to take a second. If you've ordered like a Polaroid, it's going to take a second. One thing that will be sure to be to your inbox on my merch website is if you want a custom video. I bypassed Cameo and I was like, you know what? I don't need no middleman. I'm my own middleman. And this guy wanted me to wish her friend a happy birthday. And I do it up for the videos. Oh no, this girl wanted me to wish her girlfriend a happy birthday because the guy and the girl was the Polaroid. But I have a money gun that I took out and I used my money gun and I did a balloon. Like I made it like a short film. I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm gonna get creative. Cause what else do I have? Just Kevin and you guys. Yay. Ah, yeah, I'm still learning the buttons. That one didn't make any sense. Wait, what's this one? Is that a boner? I don't know. So yeah, if you ordered merch, it's going to take a second. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Don't hate me. You know what, guys? You guys sent me a lot of good emails about some freaky magical shit that I'm so excited to read. Ever since I've been consuming the books I've read so far, listened to, but whatever, I read on Audible, 1, 2, 3, 4 books on the subject of what happens to you after you die. And your girl needs proof. I want proof. If there's scientific studies, I want to read those. I want to watch all the documentaries. And then I want to collect stories from my listeners. And all these stories that I'm collecting match exactly the things that I've already learned through these books and through these documentaries. I mean, you guys, the good news is we're on this earth for a limited amount of time in our bodies. But when we die, we don't go away. And I know that that might seem like a foreign concept to you, but it's just true. I mean, I've seen enough evidence that I'm like, yeah, this is true. It's not even, I don't even doubt it. But you should be skeptical. You listening to this, be skeptical. Don't be afraid to be skeptical. I think skepticism is very important because that's how, you know, they got to pass your own litmus tests. And that's individual to who you are as a person. But let me tell you something. A lot of you emailed me some experiences of connecting with a loved one after they've died or right before they were about to die. And I'm going to read some of them and you're going to go, that's pretty good evidence. And I'm going to go, yeah, I know. So I'm really excited to take you down this. It's not even a rabbit hole. It's just like, hey, you don't have to be afraid of death. You don't have to cling to that wrinkle cream, Tina. Put the SPF down, Lisa. Well, don't put it down. You should put SPF on. There was a point in my life where I didn't even know that you're supposed to do that. Like, I knew you're supposed to wear sunscreen, but like women in their 30s are very adamant, 30s and up, very adamant about SPF and on your face. Like, and even if you're just not even leaving your house, you put SPF on. Like, the sun could come through your windows and then fuck up your skin for the rest of your life. And I'm like, oh my God, because there was a time where I wasn't putting it on because I didn't know. I'm not going to the beach. Sometimes, I know some women are going to cringe if you're over 30s and up. I've gone to the beach without putting sunscreen on. And I just want to say that out loud so that I, and know that as I'm saying that, there's so many women going, oh, you dumb bitch. Yeah, well, you live and you learn. But there was a time where I would ask my friends like, oh, what do you, I just use like a makeup wipe at night to get my makeup off. And then I just, you know, put like moisturizer. And they're like, that's it? Oh my God. And they looked at me like I killed children for a living. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I should do some other stuff then. Give me some tips. I'm not doing it to piss you off. And that's the trials and tribulations of being a people pleaser. But ever since I discovered this, all this shit that I've been absorbing lately around this sentiment that we don't, our bodies, physical bodies die, but we go on. And trust me when I say, you're gonna be convinced when I'm done with you. My life has gotten so much easier and there's been so much more ease in my life. And I do this little, I have this like little nightly tradition because I know some people, you hear them talk about like my morning coffee routine. It's really intricate and it's meditative. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could have that. But when I wake up, I'm like, no one look at me. Like I crawl upstairs. I don't wake up for a while. So I need to like, I'm in a coma for the first 3 hours of my day still. But I have a nighttime routine because at night I'm wide awake because I like the silence. And I make a point. I've been making a point lately since reading all these books and stuff, these audiobooks. These audiobooks are great because you can fucking clean your house while you listen. You could do your nighttime routine with your glass of tea. So I have this nighttime routine and I'm really trying to make an effort to appreciate things. Just appreciate very simple things. Right? Because we're so inundated with technology. So, you know, and by appreciating it, you just notice it and you just use descriptive language in your head or out loud. If you live alone or if you don't care that your roommate thinks you're a psycho. So at night, right, I make a cup of tea and I have my own cute little combo. I do one bag of throat coat because your girl smokes too much. Throat coat tastes like jizz and not in a good way. But much like jizz, you get used to it. Throat coat, please sponsor me. And then I do one bag of Nighty Night Extra tea. Because if I have the option to do so, I'm always going to buy the product with the word extra in it. Because I happily fall for that shit, okay? I know it's a load of crap. This is my form of cutting. Let me have it. I know it's all marketing mumbo jumbo, but it makes me feel good even if it's fake. So fuck you and the horse he rode in on. Shout out to that girl who listens to this podcast while she rides horses in the snowy woods. Every time you tag me that picture, I'm like, or the video, I'm like, God damn it. That's the life I could be leading. And yet I choose this. So anyway, when I do this nighttime tea routine, I usually listen to an audiobook, but I cut up a slice of lemon. I get my baggie. I put a little plastic bag. I waste so much plastic and paper towels at night and all throughout the day. I really got to work on that. But I cut a slice out of this lemon, right? And I know this sounds nuts, but I shit you not. I dedicate a good 1 to 2 minutes to marvel at this slice of lemon. And I got it, even if you're like, it's a fucking lemon. All right, Mr. High and Mighty, come down off your golden throne and look at this lemon. It's a beautiful piece of fruit, you guys. We're so used to, our hands are so used to touching shit like a car, which is a beautiful piece of machinery. But like, you know, a car or a cell phone, which again is great technology, but like, you know, and laptops and our dicks and doorknobs and our ball sacks and toilet paper. Like when you hold a lemon in your hand and you genuinely marvel at how beautiful the layers are. And here's the kicker, okay? I'm not just like, and yes, I've had a little weed while, you know, usually by the time I'm doing the tea. Sometimes not. And I marvel at the lemon equally so, regardless of my marijuana ingestion. But then you're holding this lemon in your hand. You're like, this is pretty cool. And then you think of the fact that this shit came from a seed, bro. Buried in the dirt that grew a tree that sprouted this lemon that's in your hand. Pretty sure that's how it works. But my point is, this lemon just grew from the dirt, basically. And I mean, that's just so cool. And then you lick the lemon. Oh my God. And then you think about how like a kid probably got paid 17 cents to pick it off a tree. And then you feel guilty, but you got to stop yourself before you get to that part. Because this is about the lemon, anxious Annies. We all got anxiety, okay? But you got to marvel at it. Do it. That's your homework, okay? I'm going to give you homework now. I'm going to give all of y'all homework. I mean, you don't have to do it. You can just tell me to go fuck off. I won't hear you. But I'm going to give you all homework that forces you to have more fun, okay? So sue me. So sue me, Steven. That's my new catchphrase. That's the stage I'm healing him at, of healing that I'm at with him. If you don't know, he's a guy... He was my boyfriend for 7 years. It's a very long time. But you can always tell by the jokes I make where I'm at with the healing process. Because sometimes, and I listen back to every episode of this fucking podcast that I record. Sometimes I'll listen back and I'm like, oh, girl, you ain't healed from that yet. That joke did not land. And I don't need an audience to know that that joke didn't land. Believe you me. That fucking asshole. It's just like, ah, dude, you're such a dick. And that's where I'm at with it. I used to be like, how could someone who loves me do that? And now I'm like, you're such a fucking dick, dude. It's fine. Your punishment is I'm just going to bring it up in public. And I kind of think it's funny. But then, okay, so last night I was marveling at this lemon. I'm like, I got to write this down to tell people to like marvel at a lemon. Because I really, it's like a little thing you could do throughout your day. We're all going nuts, dude. We're all going nuts in this quarantine thing. And I don't know what country you're in, what state you're in, but let me tell you something. In New York City, we ain't playing, okay? Daddy Cuomo tells us to stay inside. And I'm like, all right, sure. And there's some comedy shows that are happening at night, which is thank fucking God there's something to do. But most times I stay inside. And so, I need to make it so that I don't want to kill myself. Really, that's all that life is. So I marvel at this lemon. And last night I was marveling at the lemon. I really was. I'm like, this is just such a beautiful piece of fruit. And it's your taste buds just do the tango on your tongue. It's really nice. It's nice to stare at something that's not a screen. But last night... I don't know why. I guess this maybe happened because I was stoned or because I was so involved in this lemon. But I accidentally, when I took the tea kettle off my stove pot, the stove, and I took the top off, put it in the sink or on the counter, and I went to fill it up. And I put what I thought was the top of the tea kettle back on the tea kettle, and it fit perfectly. And then I went to the tea, went, you know, whistle, whistle, whistle. I'm done, bitch. And I was like, all right, copy that. Let's turn the stove off and we'll pour you, bitch. And I went to pick up the teapot and my hand was burning. I'm like, what the fuck? What happened? And I look at the top of the tea kettle that fit perfectly on the tea kettle. I'm like, that's weird. Why is it all of a sudden burning? I guess I got to get a new tea kettle. Ew, I'm going to go on Amazon. Any excuse? And then I'm like, no, Christina, you got to stop buying stuff. And then I went to, I went to drink the tea eventually, and it tasted like, you know, when like a guy who's like 60 and doesn't shower and goes to the gym, and then he takes his underwear right after the gym and he just puts it in a hot pan of water, and then he does that for about a week. It tastes like you were drinking a underwear juice, but not the good kind. And I was like, well, that's strange. And then I looked at the tea kettle and I noticed that I had placed the metal colander fucking drain thing on the top of the tea kettle instead of the actual top of the tea kettle. So the drip from all of my sink gunk had gotten into the water. And I'm like, oh, that's not how I wanted this night to go. Okay. But I solved the mystery real quick. Call me Nancy Drew. I got my magnifying glass out. Yeah. They're the same size. The same size. And I was like, well, fancy me that, huh? I really want to call this episode So Sue Me, Steven, but that's probably egging on a bad thing, huh? I love being petty. It's so fun. It brings me great joy and smiles, but I also don't want to get sued again, so. Okay. Let's talk about other stuff. Before I get into your emails, and before you're not afraid of death anymore. Guys, my birthday's February 19th, and I'm going to remind you, I'm one of those birthday brats. When it's my birthday, I'm like, this is the best day ever because it's the day to celebrate myself. And I love my birthday. I love when it's other people's birthdays. It's great. You just celebrate yourself. You get one day. I mean, you get every day. But this day, I'm a brat about it. And so if you guys have other stories, like if you want to, I mean, I know the mail's really slow now, but I really love going to my P.O. box and checking the mail, and then there's mail in it. And then I kid you not, I hug it. I hug the stack of mail and I smile. Like, I don't know if you guys have ever had a kid or been in the presence of a kid that just got the Christmas present he or she or they wanted so fucking bad. And you think their face is going to fall off. They're smiling so hard. That's me. Every time I open my P.O. box, I get so happy. So if you have a cool story about like a dream or like a near-death experience or something you want to tell, and if you feel like it, write it down on a piece of paper, stick that piece of paper in an envelope, put a stamp on it, and address it to Christina Marie Hutchinson, P.O. Box 1926, New York, New York, 10016. Okay. I'm sad I'm not speaking to my parents, guys. It's the best thing for me to do right now, but I got to be honest. I'm going to be honest about my feelings. This is the new me who's not afraid of death. It makes me feel sad and lonely sometimes, and that's okay, but I want to cope. You know, I used to think cope was not a good word. I used to think coping meant like, drowning in something else or distracting yourself. The word coping and cope has popped up in the mouths of people I've conversed with lately. And whenever I notice it, I'm like, oh, I gotta look that word up. The definition of cope, dealing effectively with something difficult. And I was like, oh shit, coping's not bad. One less thing for your girl to feel guilty about. Woohoo! Thank you. Thank you so much. I know. I'm trying really hard to work on myself. Thank you. I appreciate it. So send me a letter because I get the love I need through your letters. I really do. So if you feel like it, you don't have to, but like do it if you want. I'm soliciting letters to read because I love walking to the post office and opening my little mailbox. It's one of my favorite things. It feels like a hug. Okay. Feels like a goddamn hug. Oh my God. I'm not going to do Fuckboy Theater this episode because you guys sent some really good emails, but I do want to read a message that a girl sent me that made me fucking laugh so hard. I love, you know, you can't pick your fans. You really can't. It's whoever likes you. But if you could pick them, I'd pick you guys. You're really fun. You're fun, good people that don't suck. That's a delight, you know? You think Justin Bieber's like, wow, the character and integrity of every single one of my fans. Because he's got so many that, you know, a lot of them are bound to suck. Or not even bound to suck, but they're just like tweens who want to suck his knob, slob on his knob. Which is fine, but it's like, eh. After a while, the idea of someone slobbing on your knob isn't as appealing, and that sucks because sex is so fun. Or at least I heard it was. I haven't had it in a year, but it's fine. So anyway, this girl messaged me, and she goes, last night I was having sex with a guy, and he let out this monster fart while he was coming. First time for me, and I immediately thought of you. Oh my God, thanks, girl. And you would have immediately laughed. Oh yes, I would have. I, on the other hand, said, yeah, baby, let it all out. Happy Sunday. It's so funny. Can you imagine a guy coming in you and then farting? How do you not laugh? I mean, that takes, you're a stronger woman than I, girl. You're a stronger woman than I. And I applaud you for it. Oh, book recommendation. This is not on the topic of, of fun spiritual stuff, but this is a good topic because, hey, you gotta want to be a better person, right? And leave the world a better place than you found it. And you can do that in so many ways. If you don't feel good about your life or yourself or where you're at, one of the things I always resort to when I'm like real hating on myself and I'm like, girl, you fucking suck and you're gross and you're ugly and you're not funny and you're a loser. And I'm like, okay, can you shut up? And like, no, I'm not done yet. You have bad fashion sense and you're just always in your head and you never pay attention to people. You know, sometimes when I'm in that zone, I'm like, I just need to do like, okay, I just concentrate on one, your breath, but then two, how can I be a better person, right? Like, how can I leave the world a better place? Do something like, take a disposable grocery bag to the grocery store and don't use plastic. But one of the things that I think we should all be focused on is white people. Racism is our problem. Like, the white racism in America is bad and it's terrible and it's ingrained in the system. And, you know, February's Black History Month. But I think it's every white person's duty because white people, we got to fix it. It's our, we got to fix it and not do it. Okay. And there's ways that you can do it. And I think you should try giving a shit about it, about being a better white person. And I'm reading this book called How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. So, holy Christ almighty. This guy's so fucking smart that I have to pause it. When I say reading, you know, your girl means listening. I have to pause it every 10 minutes to look up the words he's saying, or I just have to pause it. Because when I read the work of like an intellectual, like a philosopher, an intellectual, like I don't grasp it right away. So I find myself with this book and with books of this nature written by intellectuals. I got to pause it. Just to like, not even look up a word, but just go, wait, what does that mean? And then I got to take a second and go, okay, yeah, no, I think, okay. Because I'm not, I have intelligence in many areas and I love where my smarts are, but boy, oh boy, my smarts are not in that realm very much so. Because, you know, but they're getting there. It's not, I'm not saying I'm dumb. I'm just saying I can't understand people use fancy words when they talk at a normal pace. You have to talk like this. Anyway, my point is this is such a beautiful book and it's read by the author. I love when it's read by the author because then they're like, they really give a shit about the words, you know? And it introduces, I'm only in chapter 2 so far. I've been listening to it at night when I make my tea. But it takes me so long to listen to it because I have to like pause it, think about what I just heard and then replay it because I'm like, wait, what did he say? Because it's just a lot of fancy words that I'm not used to. But if you hear me talking fancy in future episodes, that's why. But he introduces this concept of you're either racist or you're anti-racist. Because being not racist is racist. And he explains it. And it's not, and oh, it's a beautiful book about the philosophy of anti-racism. And he talks about his upbringing and his parents and what has affected them in their life and the policy changes. And then they talk about the war on drugs, which I mean, that's some racist shit. And there's a lot of things. And it's just, you know, that's why one of the things with white people, we got to do our own fucking research instead of asking the black people that we know. I don't feel like they want to tell you all this shit. So this is a great book for anybody. It's just such a beautiful book about philosophies that relate to a lot of things. But one of them is, you know, how to be anti-racist. That's the title of the book. It's so beautifully written. So I highly recommend that. And I had some excerpts, but I don't even know what some of these were. I gotta dive into this book more, and I'll share like little pieces of information from this book that I think are valuable. But I swear it's taken me a long time to listen to it. I'm not even reading it. I'm listening to it. I've always dreamt of like when I'm going to move to New York and like I'm going to date a poet and he's going to talk to me about like the philosophy of like, and I don't even know how to finish that sentence, guys, but I've heard at parties people talk about that, you know. Nadine Strossen, who we've had her on Guys We Fucked. She was the first female president of the American Civil Liberties Union. She is a professor at the New York Law School. And my friend, it was her idol, like her like mentor. She was the one whose handwriting my Beyonce tattoo is in. I was like, that's cool. She was described, we would go out to dinner with her, me, my friend, and then she would invite some law students along. And she was telling me how she would have these like, she would have these dinner parties. Her and her husband, they have this gorgeous house in Connecticut. Oh my God. It's like it looks like Frank Lloyd Wright did the architecture. It's the most magical, beautiful, mystical place in Connecticut. She's the only house you see. It's surrounded by water and woods, and it's just incredible. But she also has an apartment in New York City because she's like mad rich. She's an author and she's a badass bitch. And she has these dinners where she'll invite people from all walks of life, but they're intellectuals in their own field. And I'm like, yo. And she was like, oh, you should come to one of my dinner parties. I'm like, I'm not going to lie. I got to read a lot more books before I can go to those. Because I fantasize about being invited to an intellectual New York City, these beautiful, brilliant minds of New York all coming together for a dinner party. But I'm like, I'll just kind of listen and stuff because I don't know. I don't got stuff to add yet because the way I talk, it's not like smart like. So, but I'm going to learn how to talk like smart one day, and I'll be invited to one of those dinner parties. One day, you know. I can talk about childhood trauma pretty articulately, I think. But I, you know, my whole life has been a struggle to articulate how I feel. And I'm nowhere near finished on that journey, y'all, as you can tell. As you can tell by my use of sound effect machines when I'm not exactly sure what to say. And I need a little breath. Before I get to your emails, one last thing. Not cute. Kim Jong-un edition. Yo, I'm learning a lot about Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il. Talk about poster child for trauma, childhood trauma. Kim Jong-un. All of them. All the Kims. Damn, Korea. North Korea fucked up. Wow. It's fascinating. Okay, so Kim, I'm just going to give you some facts that I don't know if you knew yet, but whatever. If you knew them, then tell me to fuck off or fast forward. But not cute, Kim Jong-un. So when Kim Jong-il, that's his dad, heard that the Olympic Committee, I didn't write down what year this was, but it was like in the 70s maybe. Don't quote me. But I'm watching this miniseries on Hulu. I think it was originally on the National Geographic because I was like, I don't know about Korea. Let's know. I got time. The Olympic Committee, the year that they announced that the Olympics would be in Seoul, South Korea, Kim Jong-il got so pissed and was like, fuck you. Guess what? North Korea is co-hosting the Olympics, and didn't tell anybody except his people, and made his people build giant ass stadiums without even consulting the Olympic Committee. And he's showing all this footage of North Korea building these stadiums. And the Olympic Committee was like, we didn't okay that. Huh? What are you doing? They built the largest stadium in the world at that time. And I'm like, men and their goddamn egos, you know? He didn't say shit. He's just like, we're co-hosting it now and I'm going to build a bigger stadium. He's like the Penelope character on SNL, Kristen Wiig. I'm going to build a stadium too, but it's going to be like a lot bigger than yours. And we're not even, we're co-hosting the Olympics, but we're like really hosting it. And you're not even hosting it because you don't even exist because we're you. So bye. And then the Olympic Committee got wind that Kim Jong-il was like, we're co-hosting. And they're like, well, wait, we didn't say that was cool. That doesn't happen. That's not how that works. The Olympic Company flew out to North Korea and then they saw all these stadiums and Kim Jong-il was like, see, look at all my shit. And it was all these like people standing in order and stuff. And then the Olympic Committee was like, nah, we're good. And then he got real pissed. That's all I'm going to reveal to you about North Korea this episode. Because that's all I learned, because that's how all I could sit through at the time. But as I collect this information, guys, you're going to get it too. So welcome to my world. Okay, so let's go. Let's get into some listener emails. I'm so excited. And again, we're going to slow roll. I'm going to slow roll this information to you. Be skeptical. Look shit up on the internet. Google things that I'm talking about in these emails. Ask yourself questions. When I'm so excited about a topic, I'm just like, I just want to tell you everything and I want you to know it without me having to say everything because it's a lot of work. But in a nutshell, some of the things that I'll be telling you, like going over, and I'll be reading like chapters from people's books just to, you know, because you know, your girl's paraphrasing isn't the best. That's why I read from the books. But we don't, when our bodies die, we don't die. There has been a number of scientific studies on near-death experiences. There have been psychic mediums. There's this foundation called the Forever Family Foundation, and it's a nonprofit foundation. And one of the authors, I've read both of her books so far. She was in the Netflix series Surviving Death. She was featured, and I just liked her. I gravitated towards her. I loved the way she talked. She kind of seemed just like fun and sweet and cool. Her name's Laura Lynn Jackson. Her first book is The Light Between Us. Her second book is Signs. So I saw her on this Netflix series, docuseries. One of the most incredible life. I mean, this fucking series, Surviving Death on Netflix, is insane. And I'm going to be, if you don't want to feel like watching it, don't worry. I'm going to present you all the good stuff in each episode as we go along in this journey, okay? Laura Lynn Jackson is a psychic medium. And then it got me on wormhole, like, who else is a psychic medium? And how do you know they're psychic? How psychic are you? And so she talks about this Forever Family Foundation, and it's founded by this couple who lost their child. And they were like, there's no way that this kid, this beautiful, vibrant child of mine, could be here one day and then gone the next. It doesn't make sense. And so they were very open to experiencing finding a way to connect to their child. They're like, there's no way he could have gone. And their story is incredible. I'll give you all the highlights later on because I really want to focus on these emails. But the Forever Family Foundation, Tess has these certified, they call them certified psychic mediums, where they put you through the ringer of tests. So you have to sit down with all these people. It's speed rounds, and you have to basically sit down. And in some of the tests, you don't even know who it is. Like, you don't even know the name of the person. And then you have to say, okay, these are the things about your life. And then after you're done with that person who's lost somebody, has had that, you know, 10 minutes with that particular psychic medium who's going through all these tests, they jot down the, you know, how correct they were. And so you have to go through the fucking battlefields of these testing to become certified with the Forever Family Foundation. And the kicker, and this was proof for me that I kind of needed too, all the psychics are volunteering their time. No one's making money. Like, it's a nonprofit organization. And so Laurel and Jackson, one of her books, talks about these various tests that she has to go through. And I'm like, okay. And how she discovered her abilities and how she hated it at first and she thought she was cursed. And I cannot recommend both of her books to you enough. And she reads them. The author reads them, the audiobooks. So if you want to go to Audible, whatever. God, Audible, can you sponsor me? I got to write that down. I want to get sponsors. I'm trying to buy my building, guys. Audible. I fucking love Audible. Anyway, so one of her books, The Light Signs, is all these stories about people communicating with their loved ones before they died or after they died. And so let's start with you guys, the listeners. Here are some of your stories, and there's so many. And I'll be reading them throughout. And if these stories trigger you to like, oh, this is other story, email it to me or like write me a letter, P.O. Box 1926. The address for my P.O. Box is going to be in this description of this podcast. So don't you worry. You don't got to write nothing down. Just take a screenshot of the description. Okay. Because your girl's lonely and doesn't have parents at the moment. Well, she does, but she's not talking to him. She needs love. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So let's get to it. Let's get to your emails. My cousin was a young Marine killed in Iraq in 2007. He was 23, an only child, and of course it was devastating to our family. We were close as kids and our families traveled to see each other and went on trips together. Our time always involved water, lakes, streams, rivers, swimming, and catching frogs and crawfish. I smoked tons of weed, so I never remembered dreams. But about a year after he died, he came to me in a dream. We were midway down a dock on a lake in the brightest, warmest light you can imagine. It wasn't hot like sun. It was calming, loving, healing, felt like home in a way. He told me he's okay and not to be sad anymore and that death isn't the end, but he could not tell me anymore. He joked about grief and then said he had to go. He joined his friends, a few guys at the end of the dock, joking, pushing each other in the water and laughing. Then I woke up and have seen grief entirely different since then. My sister had a similar dream, but they were in a canoe. Same brilliant, serene light. Tried not to write you a novel. Can't wait to hear the other stories you share. So there's one. And I'm not, and my purpose in sharing these stories, just keep these in mind. Every story that I'm reading you, there are a lot of similarities to everything I've read, or with these elements are within all of these emails. So I'm like, oh, that checks out. And I'll be sharing these elements with you in the coming months and weeks. And then you're not going to be afraid to die. But in like a, let's have fun. Okay, next email. Hi, Christina and Kevin, of course. You, Kevin's on the side. I've had three experiences in my adult life that I would love to share. The first happened 5 years ago when I was on a run. I was training for my first and last, LOL. Yeah, at least you tried. Half marathon. So I was running a lot that year. I always run with headphones and was by the ocean on my usual route. It was a Sunday morning and the road was empty. All of a sudden, I felt someone coming up behind me on my left. So I moved out of the way and turned my head to let them pass. No one was there. I stopped running. And at that moment, I thought to myself, oh, that was my grandfather, Charlie. I don't even know if I can characterize it as a thought. Somehow I just knew it was him. I've totally had that experience. I never met him. He died in his 50s, but he absolutely loved to run. Thinking back, I think that he was sending me a sign, sending me approval of my new hobby. And now let me tell you something. I've had all four of my grandparents died, but one grandparent in particular, this is me. This is not this girl's email. I was so close with. We were just this one grandpa. Him and I were like just thick as thieves. I don't know. I can't describe it. He was just my buddy. He was just such a nice guy. And I loved him so much. And he was just, I loved him. I don't know. I loved him. I gravitated towards him. Out of everyone in my family, I gravitated towards him the most. He was magical to me. And then when he passed away, I was so devastated. I was so sad. But there was one morning where I was in Central Park. I was just walking, hiking. This was years ago. This was years after he passed. And a butterfly was following me and it landed on my hand. And just exactly like this girl said, she just knew it was her grandfather, Charlie, even though she's never met this man. I knew it was my grandpa. I knew. I was like, that's Grandpa Karin's. It just, and all of a sudden it came over me. I'm like, huh? Wait, what? That's weird. It's so bizarre. And then one of the things that Laura Lynn Jackson talks about in her books is like she just you and a lot of these stories and studies that I've read about, you just kind of all of a sudden, you know it. And let me tell you something. This is a very important thing. Every single person listening to this is capable of communicating with a loved one who has passed away. Every single human being on this planet, it bears repeating every episode, you are so much more powerful than you could ever know, than I could ever do justice of describing. So just a friendly reminder, okay? Now let's, okay, continuing with this girl's email. The second was the following year. I was at work using a set of stairs almost nobody used besides me. And when I opened the door from the stairwell, I smelled perfume. Nobody was there in the hallway. And I suddenly thought, that's Ellen's perfume. Ellen was my dad's first cousin and not someone I would see too often, maybe a couple times a year. But I was always drawn to her. When I was 5, my dad's extended family traveled together to Ireland and met with her family for a reunion. I was pretty young and don't remember much, but I was attached to Ellen's hip. She was quick-witted and she had a lovely spirit. She died of breast cancer when I was 14, so you can imagine my surprise that day and my certainty that it was her perfume. It had to be close to a decade since I last smelled it. I thought it was odd and told my parents, but besides that, I didn't think too much about it. Within the next few months, my parents and I had lunch with her two sisters, and they gifted me one of her rings, and she attached a photo. Gorgeous ring with this beautiful pearl in it. Kind of looks like an eye, like an eyeball with like diamonds around it. The gift was a total surprise, and I strongly believe Ellen was sending me a sign that she was excited for me to have it. The last experience was a recent one. In September, a friend of mine passed away unexpectedly. 2 weeks before she died, I spent a whole day with her at a class on mediumship and trusting your intuition. She was really into that sort of thing. Soon after she died, I was crying in my room and my cat jumped up on the bed. Animals can, if people send you signs, is one of the things I learned in Laura Lynn Jackson's book. Spirits, like if they want to communicate with you, they use animals a lot of the times because they can. And any creature that that operates on the electromagnetic field, so the gravitational pull of the earth, so creatures who migrate, so birds, spirits can send birds, ladybugs, dragonflies, and these are animals. Anyway, more on that later. Soon after she died, I was crying in my room and my cat jumped up on the bed. I cried into his fur and I said out loud to him, "You have to help me feel her," which I know sounds wild, but I swear animals are more connected than we are.
Houston, you are correct.
She had a super distinct voice, kind of raspy, and I heard her voice clear as day laugh at me and say, quote, "Do you really think I'm going anywhere?" It was the first time I had an auditory experience like that, and it was nuts. I almost felt crazy and second-guessed myself, but I knew she was with me. That's the other thing I've had with my grandpa. My grandpa, the one that I was really loved and was close with, he always used to like mumble, but he'd be like, dum-da-dum. Like he would just like sing and mumble. And the other day I was, when I was meditating, I've smelled him before. Like I've smelled his, I don't know what he wore, some type of cologne or something. I've smelled him before and I've heard exactly like this girl is describing. I've heard him go bum bum bum. And I'm like, oh my God. And it's just, it's weird. It's a weird feeling. But you know, if you experience that, good news, you're not crazy. Isn't that fun? Isn't it fun? You ain't crazy, girl, boy, they, them. You ain't crazy. Society will have you believe that because they're anti-magic and mystical experiences. Well, not everybody. Okay, next email. Trigger warning. This is about child death. My name is, I don't want to say your name in just case you don't want me to read it. I'm a teacher. The first year in preschool classroom, I had a very special student. He was hyperactive and noisy and always on the move. We had a mandatory quiet time, which was a nap for most of the students. But this one had outgrown naps and was always making noises and disrupting others. I taught him to twiddle his thumb to keep his hands busy instead of playing with his cot. I would walk around and grin at him and he would twiddle his thumbs and I'd do it back and he would smile so big. Aww. He'd do it at home and mom later told me he would say, "Mrs. So-and-so taught me to do that." During our Christmas break, he died in a tragic accident and it broke my heart. He had a rough home life and He was one I worried about constantly. 2 or 3 days back into classes, I was waiting at the bus line with all of the preschoolers who rode the bus. This little girl who was in a different class and didn't know me well at all walked right up to me and said, "I have to show you something." She smiled this huge smile and just started twiddling her thumbs for me. I will always believe that this was a message from my sweet kiddo letting me know he was safe and happy wherever he is now. I keep his picture in my new kindergarten classroom next to my desk and let him be a reminder that my students need more than just an education in my classroom. They need love and safety. I'm not crying, you're crying. Oh, it's so beautiful. God, that's fucking beautiful. And Laurelyn Jackson's book has stories like this that'll, let me tell you something, when I say they'll blow your fucking mind, how specific and like, okay, you can't explain that away. I'm so excited for your realizations, you guys, that you're going to be making soon. Okay, next one. Ooh, and this one involves aliens too. And I was like, well, hell yeah, ghosts and aliens, sign me up. First of all, I'm so excited you're talking about this subject, and I'm looking forward to listening and learning. As soon as you said, if anyone has any experiences with loved ones who've passed away, I grabbed my phone and composed this email. So here it goes. When I was younger, a sophomore in high school, my uncle passed away from cancer. It was very hard to deal with, especially because he was one of the very few father-like figures in my life. My dad was an alcoholic and I had no relationship with him. I told no one, but when my uncle passed, I was so mad at him that he wouldn't be there for my proms, my weddings, etc. I dealt with this anger in my head for months. Then one night I had a dream about it, but it was a very different kind of dream because spirits come to you in your dreams, P.S. Over. I had a dream I was dreaming, a dream inside a dream, if you will. Oh, I've had those before. And my uncle was there. He had color in his face again. His hair was kind of disheveled and he had some teeth missing. The dream was very, very short, but in it, he gave me a hug and said, "Anne, I hope it's okay I said your name. I'll always be there, no matter what." Then I woke up crying, of course, and yelled for my mom. I opened up about being mad at him and what he said in my dream and how that's exactly what I needed to hear. I told her about his missing teeth and about how weird it was and why I dreamt that. Then she told me that he used to wear dentures because he had so many missing teeth. And in heaven, why would you wear dentures? LOL. Crazy and insane, right? Well, hold on. I have more. A couple months after that, I had a dream about my stepdad's best friend's deceased wife. Stepdad's best friend's deceased wife. Okay, got it. His friend took me in his life and always looked out for me. He was the town cop and never told my parents when he found me out and about what I shouldn't and about when I shouldn't have. Oh, I guess like mischief or whatever. So let me, I gotta make this font larger, guys. I think that's why I'm stumbling. Oops, I'm getting up there. So when his wife was alive, she was my kindergarten substitute teacher. That's the only time I've seen her and known her. She passed away when I was in first grade. So this dream I had was her walking down from the sky towards me. I was crying and confused in this dream about why his wife would come to me. She was wearing this beautiful purple dress with flowers all over it. And for some reason that stuck out the most. Again, this dream was pretty quick, and all she said to me was, quote, "Tell them I love them." This time, I woke up scared and wondering why I'm seeing these spirits or if it was even real. After thinking about it a while, I decided I needed to go tell my stepdad's best friend. I opened up and told him what she said and included the part about the dress. He told me he needed to show me her old room, which he hadn't touched since she died. I walked in and it was covered in purple and had purple flowers throughout. I was in awe. These dreams have stayed with me throughout my life. And as a grown woman, I have questioned the afterlife and God and all that jazz. But those dreams always bring me back to something, believing that there's something out there. Or why did I find out these things in these dreams I have never known?
Houston, that's because a spirit told it to you.
We're all psychic, guys. Sometimes you can get communicated through, according to all the reading I'm doing, mainly Laurel and Jackson's books, they can communicate with you through your dreams. A lot of times when you're taking a shower or driving a car and you're doing something automatic, so like you're engaged, but you're kind of just like off in La La Land. You know, you could drive to someone's house and like not really remember the drive. It's easier to enter your subconscious that way, for someone to enter your subconscious that way, a spirit, a good one. Well, I guess maybe a bad one, but I don't, it doesn't seem to be any bad stuff. That's why I'm like, uh-oh, is there hell? If you kill somebody, spoiler alert, it's not going to be fun for you when you die. Meaning like, you know, I don't know, but I don't, that's to say like, what if I accidentally killed someone in a car crash? I don't think that means anything. Guys, I'm still figuring it out. But my point is, there's all these ways that you can have be communicated with, whether it's through your dreams or through a creature that operates within the electromagnetic field of the earth, or through, I don't know, people passing by and you hear a phone conversation and somebody says this word that you were just thinking, you know, that kind of shit. Again, we'll get into all those specifics and you're going to be a goddamn believer. Okay, let's get to more emails because these are really good. Back in January of 2017, my father died. I had a dream, I guess a few hours before, that he was sitting in the Venetian blinds, as if it were possible to sit between the blinds. In the living room window, not weird at all, he said, "Pray for me," while reaching his hand out towards me. I was annoyed that he was, yet again, depending on me to do his praying, amongst other things. For him, doing the praying for him. Real life, he was a minister and a pastor in a church in Brooklyn when I was younger. I grabbed his hand, this is in the dream, and said, "God help him." That was all that came out, all I could muster. That was the end of the dream. I woke up that Sunday morning and went to wake him up. Nothing. His arm was stiff. He wasn't breathing or doing any of the still alive stuff that sleeping people do. Even though he was 91, people were shocked. So he wasn't that type of 90 something. Anyway, that was the dream. The only death warning one that I can recall. One of the episodes of Surviving Death, the docuseries on Netflix, is about people dying. And a lot of times they interviewed this man who is a hospice doctor in upstate New York. And he says every single one of his patients is visited by a loved one who has passed before they die. It's a sign that it's their time is coming. And he said every single patient. And I have a good friend, one of my best friends, tell me about this experience with her, one of her grandparents, where, and this was years and years ago. And I remember when she told me about this experience, I was like, holy shit, there's like magic that no one's I knew it. We don't die when we die. Like I remember she told me the story about her grandparent passing away and I was bawling my eyes out. I was like, this is the most, it's just beautiful. It's that, and of course, you know, we grieve the loss of being able to communicate with someone's physical body, but you can still communicate with them, guys. And they're probably trying to communicate with you. Odds are you just got to look around and be open to the signs, according to Laurel and Jackson, and now me. But she told me the story about how her grandparent hospice, that she was in the house, they had a video camera, like a nanny cam, on top of a fireplace, right? So her grandparent is in this bedroom, the door's open, it's in the middle of the night. She shows me footage of this camera, and it looks as though there is an explosion in the room that her grandparent is in. It looks like a giant explosion, like a nuclear explosion, a huge ball of light extending. And then I saw it on the video camera and I made her play it for me multiple times. I was bawling my eyes out while I was watching this because I was like, holy shit. And then the next day, her grandparent said that she had been visited by a loved one, the spouse, who had passed away. And then about a day later, this person passed away. And then the day this person passed away, there was swarms of dragonflies going in a loop around the house that the grandparent was in. It was one of the uncle, like one of her sons, and all the family was there. And she walked outside, my friend, and she was like, what the fucking shit? She heard something hit the window like violently. She goes outside. There's swarms of dragonflies flying in a circle around her house. And all the neighbors were outside going, what the fuck? And they were all taking video. And she was like, all right, you guys see that too, right? And I'm like, okay, that's for me. I'm like, all right, that's all I need to know that this is worth looking into. But a lot of times, if before a loved one dies, you'll know, sometimes you know about it. And I'm like, well, that's wild. Or like, I've heard so many stories of somebody going about their day and then they just feel like a, or like a, something, like their breath is taken out of them or something. And then they go, and then, you know, somebody that I was really close with had passed away. And I asked what time they passed away. And it was exactly the time that I felt the sensation. And I'm like, all right, guys, our physical bodies may go away, but our spirit lives on. It's crazy. And a lot of that hospice doctor in one of the episodes was saying that half, I believe he said half, 50% of his patients will see these, will be visited by a loved one who has passed away while they are awake. And they're like, huh? And it's like they're really there. It's like a hologram, like the person is there. And I'm like, that's fucking cool. There was one of his patients was a young girl who was dying of cancer. And before they actually interviewed her for this series, it was really sad. But before she passed away, she gave an interview for the show saying that she was visited by her childhood dog. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then I just took Kevin and I was like, I'm across the heart when you die. But you got to appreciate the time you have with people, guys. All right. Okay, here's another one that's... this is the one that involves aliens. This is the one that involves aliens. This is the last one I'm going to read. I'll be reading these all throughout the next couple weeks, okay? Prepare to have your life change. Prepare to have your life fucking changed, okay? All right, last email. A little backstory. I lost my dad when I was 17. I'm currently 31. He was an amazing father, but he had his struggles with depression and alcohol and didn't take care of his health. Our heart attack was eventually what took his life. This would be a major turning point in my life, as I'm sure you can imagine. I grew up kind of spiritual. My dad was an artist, and with art comes a sense of spirituality. I remember many nights of him forcing me to sit outside and look at the stars with him, where he would say, he would give me lectures on listening to my intuition. Oh, that's fucking cool. And telling me, quote, we're all a little psychic, you know.
Houston, he's correct.
I say forced because I was a teenager and usually my dad was a little intoxicated by that point, and nothing was more annoying than your drunk father trying to have a bonding moment with you at that age. Oh yeah, I totally get that. I now cherish those moments and I wish I had more. After he passed, was when I started to experience things that I still find hard to explain. The first was a sleep paralysis dream. In reality, I'm trying to fall asleep. Unknowingly, I slip into a dream where in this dream, I'm also trying to fall asleep. But I get a feeling of a presence in my room. I look to the left and see a figure standing beside my bed. Scared, I try to move, but I'm paralyzed. Oh, I've heard about sleep paralysis. Sounds fucking terrible. Unable to move, I panic and snap out of my paralysis, grab the remote sitting on my bedside table on the other side of my bed, and throw it at the figure. In reality, I sit straight up in bed. Confused, I look around the room. I look for the remote that I tossed across the room, only to find it is still sitting on my bedside table. Oh, I've had that shit happen where you're like, wait, this is real, right? And then you're like, nah, bitch, that ain't real. You got to go through a couple more levels to get out of this dream. Oh, maybe so. Maybe I've had that. Anyway, this wouldn't be the only sleep paralysis dream I have. They continued for a few years, always with a presence in the room I was sleeping in. I often wondered if it was my dad coming to say hello and if sleep paralysis is some weird limbo of the in-between. The presence itself was never threatening, just there. I once felt it run its hand along my body like it was comforting me and whispered my name. What was really scary was the sleep paralysis. Although it's comforting to think that it's my dad coming to say hi. I do not miss the feeling of being paralyzed in a dream. I have also often felt I've made contact through my guidance cards. Like tarot and stuff. The night before I did a reading, I had a horrible experience with my mom. She too didn't take care of her health and fell very ill. On this night, she had to be taken to the hospital. I remember that night talking to my dad in my head, pleading to him to take care of her. The next day, I did a card reading, and in this reading, I got a card that states, quote, through this card, someone wants to make their presence felt. They want you to know that they have not left you and will never leave you, for you are forever connected by invisible threads of love. That's exactly what Laurelyn Jackson says in her book, y'all. I have continued to get this card throughout my readings, once on the anniversary of his death, which instantly would put a smile on my face, and I'd say hello to my artist's father. Because I experienced this loss at such a young age, I have really grown to accept death and what it could mean. It does not scare me. I think society instills that fear in people because without it, there wouldn't be control. Because in the end, isn't that what everyone's afraid of? Yeah, well, if you're your girl, you're certainly afraid of it. Now, my experience with premonitions. I've had a few. Most come in dreams, some with passing thoughts. My most recent came 2 days before my uncle passed away in a care home, sadly due to COVID. Oh, I'm sorry. The dream was very strange and might be hard to explain through an email. Unfortunately, there was some disconnect with my family and his. My brother had recently gotten into a fight with his daughter over the internet, which led to her blocking us all from social media. I was going to try to reach out to my uncle around Christmas time, but time was sadly not on my side. 2 days before my uncle passed away, I had a dream where I was visiting his daughters. His daughter's daughter, my cousin, who is my age. We were at a bar drinking and we were outside to smoke a cigarette. In this dream, I was trying to make amends and try to repair the relationships of our families. But every time I would try to get into the conversation, a cat would drag a dead animal towards me. I remember the cat kept doing it over and over again, kind of morbid, but it stuck with me. When I found out my uncle passed away, this dream instantly came to my mind. I've also had really pointless premonition dreams, such as being at a doctor's office getting my teeth pulled and then waking up to a phone call from my orthodontist. And then the simple passing thought premonitions where something random comes to my mind, then that day it gets brought up. I've always found premonitions fascinating. My mom has also had them. Me and my brothers often joke that it's genetic. We're a very intuitive family.
Houston, according to Laurelyn Jackson, it is genetic.
Or at least, you know, you're fostering an environment where you're open to that kind of stuff. Because you could be, I mean, most kids are psychic. Most kids can connect, like recall like weird stuff. And the parents usually, you know, go, oh, you're just crazy or whatever. Like, ha ha, little Timmy, so funny. And you don't have an opportunity to, you know, develop it or make it grow. You kind of just go, oh, you learn from your parents. Oh, okay, I guess that's just a bunch of bullshit. Okay, then I guess I'm full of shit. All right, see you later. I'm going to go fix myself for the rest of my life until I'm 32 and figure it out. Now for my bonus UFO story. Yes, I have one. I mean, I got to read that. It was a night in my early 20s. A small group of us are hanging on out on a friend's patio, smoking a doobie. Of course, this isn't how the stories always start. One of our friends is playing the guitar and we're all doing a bit of stargazing. I guess my dad taught me well. It's quite a surreal moment. Anyways, I'm looking in the sky when suddenly a shooting star appears and I say, hey, look, a shooting star, and point to the sky. Everyone looks up, and as the shooting star gets closer, it turns into two red bulbs. Holy shit. Flies over our heads, does a half circle, and flies over the house. Whoa. That's fucking wild. I remember my whole body vibrating and not being able to keep my hands from spilling my drink all over the place. All of us in awe. My friend suggests we all draw out what we just saw and compare the visions. They all looked exactly the same. Needless to say, I couldn't watch alien movies after that. The Fourth Kind terrified me so much, I almost had a panic attack watching it. It's funny to think of now. Oh, wait, did she attach? I thought she attached something. Downloads. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, was that? Oh, that was for someone else's story. Okay, yeah, that was for someone else's story. But anyway, there's a bonus alien. I mean, I don't know much about the alien stuff yet, y'all. But I always will love a good alien story, you know? Hey, there we go. How you doing? Do you believe that there's no death yet? Oh, you don't? That's okay. You should be skeptical. The human brain is very skeptical. But I'm so excited for you. Guys, I'm so excited for all y'all. to be on this journey, because shit's bigger than you think, man. It's crazy, man. And I'm stone cold sober. And I don't think, like, weed. God, I love weed. I realize the more I think about, like, how much I love weed, I'm like, I don't really like alcohol. It kind of sucks. Like, I don't like the way it works on me. But when I smoke weed, I just feel like I'm more open. I don't know how else to describe it. That's why I only like doing it by myself. I don't like doing it around other people, because I feel like if somebody else has shit energy, it's just going to leak into me and I'm going to go, ew. And then they're going to go, what? I'm like, oh, I said that out loud. Oops. So there we go. That's today's episode of The Voices in Our Heads. And if you have a story of this similar ilk, alien or otherwise, guys, my email is thevoicesinourheadspodcast@gmail.com. My P.O. box is in the description of this podcast. That's all this stuff is in the description. But tell me it, but write me a letter, because I'm lonely, okay? Please, just tell me a fun story or whatever. Send me I don't know, whatever you want to do. You don't have to. But one thing also, if you want to rate and review this on iTunes, that'd be sick. The iTunes podcast app. That's how people can be on the charts. I got a lot of reviews. And I'm like, shouldn't I be on? But you know what it is? This is my problem that I'm still working on. I'm too scared to look at the iTunes comedy podcast chart, because if I'm not in the top 200, I'm going to be sad. And I'm like, well, that's stupid. You just, here you go, wanting the awards. Well, you know, I love a good award. I want an award. I want to be in first place all the time, because that means then I really do deserve love. But I'm afraid to see if The Voices in Our Heads is in the top 200. But I know for a fact that if I continually ask the listeners to rate and review, give me good, you know, good stuff, then the likelihood that I'll be in the charts is high and that I won't have to check it. And I'll just like hope and wish that I am. So, hey, we all got work to do. I'm no exception to that rule. But let's learn about talking to our dead loved ones and aliens and spirit guides and all this fun fucking shit, because spoiler alert, the purpose of this earth is to learn, to educate yourself on, just to soak up knowledge. We're all sponges, guys. And to love, all kinds of love, not just romantic love. Love for your pet, love for your friends, love for your coworkers. If you love them, you don't have to love them, but just like love, you know, the people you do love, bask in it, y'all. Okay. All right. I love you guys. I'll talk to you next Wednesday.
I used to live in a psychic city. I never knew what would happen in a day. I might be looking out the window and a friend might say, come on over, over, come on over, over, come on over, we're having a party for you. Come on over, over, come on over, over, come on over, we're having a party for you. I used to live in a voodoo city where every little thing had its own secret life. Washing up the dishes, and the kitchen might say, hang around, baby, baby, hang around, baby, baby, hang around, baby, we'll be baking a cake for you. Hang around, baby, baby, hang around, baby, baby, hang around, baby, we'll be baking a cake. I'd fall in love every minute on the street.